Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of some articles that I have written and tell you how to access them. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will discover there are some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. For example, one of the most recent articles was my take on the demise of the culture wars and where I think we ought to go from here. Another article that appeared several years ago in a journal for biblical manhood and womanhood is entitled Boundaries Without Bonds. Another is a rebuttal of a tract that appeared several years back. The author attempted cleverly, but as I will show unsuccessfully, to persuade us that the scriptures do not condemn homosexual practice. After all, that has all been a misunderstanding. Well, there will be others, but I mentioned those three. I'm not a regular blogger, but when sometimes things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article like some of these.
We are presently in our study of 1 Samuel in chapter 22. In our last segment, we were looking at 1 Samuel 22, verses 4 and 5, and as our time ran out, we were making a point that we want to go back and lock into and move forward in the rest of the chapter. We were noticing in chapter 22, verse 4, that David had taken his family to Moab to put under the protective custody of the king of Moab. And he left them there with the king in a safe place, and they may be with David all the time that David was in the stronghold. The stronghold, we pointed out, was either a natural or a man-made citadel or fortress. Then we saw that somewhere in this scenario, the prophet Gad enters the picture. Whether he had been with David all this time, David had come to know him, or whether he was sent by God to meet David, we don't know. It doesn't matter. But what Gad did is come to David with a message not to stay in the stronghold, but to depart and to go into the land of Judah. And we noticed that David did precisely that, and he went to a place, and we don't know where it was, but somewhere in southern Judea, probably in the southwest area, the forest of Heth. Well, the point we were making is that there are times when we are in strongholds ourselves. That is, we seek out for ourselves a place of security, and sometimes that translates to a place of comfort. A place where we're not out there on the cutting edge, a place where we're neither challenging the world or a place where we're not being challenged in the Lord. That is a natural tendency. And I pointed to an example of that in our contemporary Christian experience, the habit of cocooning, for example. And I didn't get this far the last time, and it's why I wanted to pick back up on this. We are finding that more and more Christian people, and I'm talking about serious, honest, genuine, devout Christian people, while they're very willing and very teachable, oftentimes when it comes to evangelism, frankly, they do not have that many Christian friends to whom they can reach out. They've pulled in around themselves and pulled in around the church, and there's something good about that, but this is a habit that is being overcooked, and we're not out there challenging the enemy for his territory. And I think the Lord would come along to many of us and would say, sometimes get out of the stronghold. Get out of your comfort zone. Get out of the place where you feel secure. Because the growing edge is out here where you feel the threat. The growing edge is out here where you're challenged to your socks. The growing edge is out here where you feel the hostility up close and personal. this is where I want you. This is where your faith will be stretched. God has times for us to have spiritual R&R, and there are times that he will put us in the stronghold. And I'm not trying to be extreme here and say that this is never appropriate, but I do think that sometimes we carry a good thing to extremes. And let me make this point, and I've spent a lot of time on it. I do not think that it's inappropriate, and I don't want to be understood that way, to put our kids in Christian schools. I do not want to be understood as saying that it is inappropriate to do homeschooling. Both my daughters went to secular public schools. In fact, both of my daughters attended Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, that school you know about. But one went to a secular college and one went to a Christian college, went through Wheaton College. I taught in a Bible college for 10 years, so I've seen all sides of the fence, and of course I've been through public schools and secular universities, all that kind of thing. So I think I've been around the block. I am concerned that we do not understand the principle embedded in this, get out of the stronghold. Here's what I mean. Folks, sometimes we do not understand that innocence does not lead to righteousness. Sometimes we think we can put ourselves or we can put our children in isolation. We can put them in some kind of box and we can put walls around them. We can keep them out of the world by us putting up walls so they can't theoretically get into the world. And a lot of our kids are not served well by this. They just spend their time with their nose pressed up to the glass looking at that big bright world out there and thinking, boy, that sure seems exciting. We would be, in many cases, better off, at least with certain children, if they had to go out and really face the world. And if we went out and we faced the world, then we would be on our knees more and we'd be more dependent upon the Lord. And we would grow more if we got out of the stronghold. Cocooning is not a good habit. Now, I don't know how that translates in your life, but I want to leave that thought with you because I think it's something that we need to think about. And we may have to revise some of our thinking. And again, I'm not about to say, I do not mean to say, I think circumstances are individual in many cases, and different decisions would be made. But I think some kids may benefit by being, for example, in a Christian school. And some kids, I know mine, would not have benefited, particularly at an early age, being the kind of kids they were. They would have probably grown stale in that kind of environment. But being out there and being challenged and being thinking kids, in the end, made the right decisions. Think about that. The Lord told David, do not stay in the stronghold. Point. I don't want you there. I want you out here where you're going to be stretched. And so he went into the land of Judah. Well, verse 6. Oh, one other thing that's very important to notice there in verse 5. And that is this. Notice how good the Lord was to David to send Gad to him at this time. David was not a man in rebellion. David had a heart after God. David wanted the will of God. But David was like you and I. He didn't see and he didn't know everything that he should see or he should know. And God is kind and gracious and merciful. And at the right time, he had Gad there, who was in touch with his spirit. And Gad said, this is the will of the Lord. But here's the beautiful thing. It's not only God's provision, but I want you to notice David had ears. And folks, when we have ears for God, we have a heart for God and ears attuned to God. You know what? The Lord is kind and gracious, and he'll put people around us and bring people to us who are attuned to the Spirit of God. Not a prophet, I'm saying, but God will bring his people around us, and they will say the things that we need to hear. Let me tell you a story in that direction. It's very much this kind of thing, though less direct. I mentioned teaching in a Bible college years ago from 1970 to 1980. That was college in Denver, now Colorado Christian University, merged with another Bible college to become such. But at one point, the offer was extended to me to become dean of that Bible college. And that was, of course, flattering, and that appealed to my vanity, as you might imagine. And just think, I could write mother and tell her that your son is now the dean of the college, and that sort of foolishness. But those things run across our minds, certainly did mine at that point. And I was weighing whether or not to accept that position. And it occurred to me, as I weighed that position, that most of the job that was involved in being the dean of a college had content that I didn't even like. What I loved being was a teacher, and what I would have loved about being a dean was to have so much influence on picking the faculty that would teach there, which was really vital. But unfortunately, that was only about 10 or 15% of the job. Very crucial 10 or 15%, but the bigger part of the rest of the stuff, I really wouldn't have liked. All of this accrediting stuff and making up schedules and curriculum deals and all of that kind of thing would have driven me bananas. But still, there was that other legitimate interest, and there was also the ego thing. But, you know, being a weak and fallen human being, the Lord was merciful. What was in my heart, I didn't intend to be wickedness. There was human weakness. And I was talking to another faculty member one day who had absolutely no clue about this offer that had been made to me, and he said, we were talking about chaplains of all things, and he had been close to the military and to the chaplaincy. And I had, at one point, before I finished seminary, I'd been thinking for years and years, even a high school kid, about being a career military chaplain. And so I had an interest in this conversation, and I remember Lim said one day to me, you know, Jim, it's kind of a sad thing in the chaplaincy. He said, I have seen so many of the best ones promoted right out of the ministry. Bingo. That was about as near as a direct word from the Lord as I would ever need. I heard the Spirit of God all over that. Lamb could have been Gad. Promoted out of the ministry. What an echo in the chambers of my mind. That's what's about to happen to me if I take this position. I'm a teacher. That's where my heart is. And I don't want to be an academic administrator. I don't even enjoy most of the content of the job. The only thing that would cause me to take it is 10%, 15% legitimate interest, and the rest of it all having to do with my ego and resume. For all of my weakness, at least the Lord had given me ears for that. And because I wanted the Lord's will, I really, really wanted to do what God wanted, in spite of what the flesh wanted. God is gracious to you and to me and to everybody else, and He gave me the direction that I needed. That's what we can learn here from David and David's experience with Gad. And what God did for David, God will do for you and me, and you can probably recite your own illustrations. Well, we come to verse 6. Now we see the great contrast. Saul heard that David and his men who were with him, about 400 at this time, had been discovered. His spies, his intelligence apparatus was working efficiently. Saul was sitting in Gibeah, which was the first capital of the first monarch, and they were having a round table in the open air under the tamarisk tree. That was apparently a landmark on the height with his ever-present, ever-ready spear in his hand because a king was a warrior. And that was basically his signature as a warrior king. And all of his servants were standing around him, advising him, and they were consulting, and Saul had apparently called this meeting, and he said to his servants who stood around him, "Hear now, O Benjaminites," and these were people who were up close and personal with him from the tribe of Benjamin. "What's with you people?" he's saying. "You're letting this son of Jesse get away. Tell me." And now he appeals to their venality. "Is he going to give you fields and vineyards? Is he going to give you all these royal favors? Will he make you commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? I mean, who's giving you your resume anyway?" And then he accuses them. He said, "I'll tell you what, you've all conspired against me so that there's no one around here who's going to tell me what I need to know. And you haven't even told me when my son Jonathan turned his back on me and made a covenant with this scoundrel. And there's none of you." And now Saul is in a mode of self-pity. "There's nobody who's even sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant." That was a lie. To lie in ambush, as it is this day. But when a man or a woman gets in Saul's mode and is spiritually disintegrating and becomes filled with insecurity and malice and jealousy, all of a sudden they begin to magnify everything out of proportion, believe every lie, and have plenty of people around them keeping the gossip hotlines going, and everything is blown out of proportion. And David, is slandered, and so is his son Jonathan, because neither one of them is in that mode. But there are always people around who are willing to believe that stuff. Well, all of a sudden we see the reemergence of a character we saw in the last chapter, Doeg the Edomite, who was in Saul's service. He was not a Jew, not a Hebrew, but he was in Saul's service. And we see him standing around the confabulation here, and he answered and he said, "Oh, well, Your Majesty, I can help you with that. I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and Ahitub acquired of the Lord for him." We don't have any record of that over there, but Ahitub seems to consent to it. We know the record is compressed. "And the priest gave him provisions. I saw him give them to him, and he gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine." And Doeg is of that type that we call an opportunist. And he was seeking to curry favor. Saul had struck a chord with him, and it wasn't pity, but the desire to curry favor with the king. And now he's going to lay lives on the line by telling things that should not be told. Let me tell you something. The Doegs always show up. They always show up at the door of God's servants. And they're always there to do the devil's heavy lifting. And you can just count on that. You will experience your Doegs as I've experienced mine and virtually every other Christian leader. Well, this really torches the king. He's in a tizzy about this, so he immediately sends someone to summon Ahimelech the priest and all of his family, his father's household, the whole priestly community at Nob, and he marched them all in before him. And then he really reads him the riot act, and he said, "Why have you," verse 13, "the son of Jesse, you and the son of Jesse conspired against me?" He hadn't, but Saul assumes this. "And that you've given him bread and a sword, and you've inquired of God for him, that he should rise up against me by lying in ambush," another slander against David. Total distortion of David's posture. Well, Ahimelech gives him a brilliant answer, and the truth is always brilliant. He said, "Your Majesty, I really don't know what you're talking about." And he exonerates David. He said, "Who among all your servants has been as faithful as David? I don't know anything other than that. In fact, he's your very son-in-law. Why wouldn't I help him? He's captain over your guard. He's honored in your house. Why, in the name of all that's holy, wouldn't I help him? And, Your Majesty, this is not the first time that I have inquired of God for him as a priest. My goodness, do not let the king impute anything to his servant or to any of the household of my father, for I don't know what's going on here. But I know nothing at all of this affair, this conspiracy you're talking about." That didn't pacify Saul in any way. And we see what happens to a man who revolts against God and turns his back on God. He will stoop eventually to anything. Finally, his conscience will go so hard that his moral sensibilities are just impervious to any right instincts. And we see also how power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there were no restraints, internal or external, on the king. And suddenly he says, "You shall die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's household." And he's going to put this priest to death and all of his household. He's going to have them executed. And the king said to the guards who were attending him, "Turn, put the priests of the Lord to death, because their hand is with David in this affair. And they knew he was fleeing. They did not reveal it to me." But the servants of Saul stood up to him, and they were not willing. They were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priests of the Lord. And there's that loyalty issue again. It was a serious matter to tell a king, "No, you're taking your life in your hands." But they would rather fall into the hands of Saul on this occasion than to fall into the hands of a holy God and to violate what was sacred. And they drew their lines of loyalty in exactly the right place. In any tension, go with what is right. Go with who is right, and go with God and with no one else. Well, then the king said to Doeg, he found his man. The devil always has somebody to do his heavy lifting, remember. And the king said to Doeg, "You turn around and attack the priest." And he was ever ready. Boy, he thought he was going to become a big dog because of this. And he went at his work with a vengeance. He turned around, he attacked the priest, and he killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod, that is, insignia of the priestly office. And he didn't stop there. He struck Nob, the city of the priest, with the edge of the sword. both men and women, children and infants. And he didn't stop there. He went on to ox and donkeys and sheep, and he struck those with the edge of the sword. How interesting. How interesting. Here was Saul, who at an earlier stage in his monarchy had been instructed by the Lord to fulfill a divine ban against the Amalekites, a wicked tribe who were the embodiment of evil and who were the embodiment of the enemies of Yahweh himself. And the Lord himself had decreed a ban upon those people and ordered Saul to go and to execute, to kill, to annihilate every living, breathing thing. That was God's judgment, and it was a revealed judgment. And he sent men to do it, and Saul did not do it. But here, Saul is bold enough to stand up and to order the execution, as he was before, of the priests of the Lord of all things. There, more than anything else, is the most vivid portrayal of the moral disintegration of a man who kept fighting God and ultimately hardening his conscience. And he stoops even to this. We're going to see later where he's deluded, self-deluded. He's in denial. And this is the kind of thing that happens to people when they turn their hearts cold to the Lord and they let their conscience be so battered that ultimately it becomes insensitive and they can no longer hear the dog bark. Well, one person does escape. In the providence of God, one son of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, who was named Abiathar, he escaped and he fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priest of the Lord. You just read that sentence. Saul had killed the priest of the Lord. What a horrendous crime. These men stood for God. They had been placed in office by him, and therefore called, they were sacred. And this man has the boldness and the hardness to step out and to order their destruction. He killed the priest of the Lord. Well, David is dumbstruck by this news. In verse 22, David says to Abiathar, if I can paraphrase slightly, oh, Lord God, I just knew. Oh, why didn't I follow my instincts? I just knew when Doeg the Edomite was there when I was conferring with Ahimelech and seeking provisions. Something just told me that this guy, who he knew to be a servant of Saul, was going to leak this to Saul. He was going to go back and he was going to report all this to Saul. Oh, man, I knew it. I knew he was going to do that. Been there, done that, haven't you? And then David does something that shows his strength of character. I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. What's he talking about? Well, if you were with us in that study, you know, but what David had done, he had deceived Ahimelech, fearing that perhaps the priest would not help him if he knew that David was now persona non grata with Saul, and that he would be putting him in a position of helping a rival and a outlaw. So David deceived Ahimelech, and yes, he did get him in terrible trouble when this news broke. And we talked about the error of that kind of deception, and we won't go back and cover that again. But what I want you to notice is David accepts responsibility. I have brought about the death of every person in your father's household. I'm so sorry. Stay with me. Do not be afraid. He who seeks my life seeks yours, for you are safe with me. They have common enemies, and God's going to take care of David. Therefore, God will take care of Ahimelech, and he's confident of that. Next time, we'll turn to chapter 23. Thanks for being with us. May God bless you.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.
Be sure the word. Be sure the word. sure the work gets in their hands.